Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, all about the world's greatest superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
G'day, everyone. I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And if you want to send us emails, you can send them to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook, and there's a blog which has stuff about our show at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com in some sort of combination.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, who is Wilfred. He's at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, and if you have a look at Comicosity at the moment, there's an interview with Chris Sabella and some bloke called Hickson, which isn't me, about his new book called Shanghai Red.
Oh.
So I think this is an Image book, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so that sounds cool. So, yeah, Chris Sabella, friend of the show, occasional guest. So that looks very exciting. That's Joshua Hickson. Sounds like a made-up name. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike, how was your week in comics?
Haven't really read much other than what we'll be talking about in this episode. Hooray, hooray. Probably the most pop culture type thing I've been doing is watching lots of BoJack Horseman on the Netflix. Very much become a big fan of that show. And powering through season 4 at the moment. So really enjoying how miserable some of the characters are in that show and feeling better about my life choices. So, yeah. How about you and your reading and week and such?
I powered through a great big pile of DC comics that James Rift has bought recently. So I read some Green Lanterns and some Wonder Womans and stuff, and Doomsday Clock. Can I just say I'm really enjoying Doomsday Clock? I know it's probably not very PC to say how much you like it, but it's really good. I'm just really enjoying the craft of it all, and it's okay. Very intriguing, and there's some really good character work in it, which is, it's probably the comic I'd be most keen to read the next issue of at any given stage right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and I read my Punisher, the Platoon book, which it's a bit disingenuous because the Punisher isn't really in it, but Frank Castle is, and it's basically Garth Ennis telling the story of Frank Castle's very first tour in Vietnam, where he was not experienced at combat, but very quick to learn and quick to ask the best and the smartest questions of the best people. So, and that was a fabulous read. That was amazing. So, it's a war comic, really, but a really, really great one. So, and it sort of touches on what's happening on the Vietnamese side as well. So, what were they doing time? So it's got two sides of the story.
Right.
Quite amazing. Very, very compelling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, I think it's the time of the show where we usually see what's happening on Derrington Way.
Let's do it.
Well, there's nothing. Nothing.
Right. Imagine that.
Yeah, those gents are very quiet. One thing that's really exciting is Doug Zavisha went to a Comic Con and a comic convention, for those of you who aren't in the industry. And he got to chat with Keith Giffen. He got some talking about Waiting for Doom with Keith Giffen. So let's have a listen to that.
Okay.
No, I don't want anything to do with those guys. I don't want anything to do Waiting for Doom. No. Just no.
Wow, a lot to absorb there.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Thanks, Doug. Yeah, right.
Wow. So that really was Keith Giffen. We're not, yeah. But in other exciting news, W. Frank, he went and to another convention and he got to talk to Mark Waid and he asked him a few questions. Let's roll tape on that.
Any interesting stories from your brief stint as the Doom Patrol editor? Doom Patrol?
Oh, I mean, only that it was the easiest job in the world. It's a testament to the editorial philosophy that was handed down from Dick Giordano and that I still carry, which is the way to be a good at comics editor is hire the right people and just get the hell out of the way. And that way you get to go home at 5 o'clock and there's great comic books out. That's all you want. You don't want to have to get hire somebody you got to go in and fix. And Grant's genius. I mean, all I had to do was take out all the U's because it was all in British English. I had to go out and take out all the extra U's and change spellings every once in a while, and that was it. The easiest job ever.
Well, that was very interesting. Is that ticking I hear, Mike?
It sure is, Paul. Do you know what that means?
No, I don't.
It means you must be new here and that it's time for the Doom Clock.
Ooh.
Okay, so as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's been 5 weeks since we last saw the Patrol in a comic, and that was Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 11, leading to Milk Wars, which we discussed back in Episode 122. Issue 12 is, at this stage, due...
Who knows when?
Who knows?
I don't know.
You've got no last-minute, you know, finds on the interwebs with any sneaky stuff?
No, I don't think anything's coming from...
No.
It's all very quiet. Who knows? It is unannounced.
At this stage.
Yeah. It's hidden.
Right, like a ninja. Yeah, sure. But this week, in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale June 2nd, 1966, for a mere 12 cents American, was Doom Patrol number 105, by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani, and edited by Murray Boltanoff. In this issue, the Patrol took on Mr. 103 and then discovered Nicholas Galtree's scheme to embezzle Beast Boy's inheritance in the Honeymoon of Terror.
Boo.
Ooh. And then there was a backup story titled The Robot Maker Must Die, which shed some light on the Robot Man's origin and the formation of the Patrol.
Mm.
Nice. Now, we covered this issue and issue 106, which was our honeymoon episode from episode 49 of March of 2016. Gosh, that makes me feel old. So old. But yes, that was our honeymoon, what honeymoon episode, because it was right after Rita and Mento got married. They were meant to go on a honeymoon, but no, they went on adventures instead.
Yeah, dear. Good times.
Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Whew, racing through it.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, where we take a deeper look into a couple of issues from a Doom Patrol run. And this week we are returning to Volume 4 by John Byrne. Looking at issues. I know, I'm reining in my excitement. We'll be looking at issues 9 and 10. From Volume 4. So, Paul, kick us off with Issue 9 of Volume 4.
I can't live up to that introduction. You've built it up too much, Mike.
I have to make something about these good.
Okay, so we're looking firstly at Doom Patrol number 9, which was cover dated April 2005, but in reality, it came out on February the 16th on 2005. It cost $2.50, way too much. It was edited by Mike Carlin, and written by John Byrne, and he also did the pencils. It was inked by Doug Hazelwood, lettered by Jared K. Fletcher, and coloured by Alex Blayart. And it has a cover that shows the three active members of the Doom Patrol, in this case Negative Man, the energy form, Rita, who's very embiggened, and Cliff Steel, Robot Man, and they are being swamped by this sort of gaseous, multicoloured monster. With a gaping face, looking sad. Anyway, let's take you through it. So, previously, the Doom Patrol fought some mysterious guy with mysterious motivation, and they had a mysterious time, and he had mysterious powers, and it was a completely and he had a completely mysterious identity.
Mm.
As a result of this very satisfying and mysterious encounter, three things occurred which impact the next issue, which we're about to read now. The first thing was Grunt, the four-armed ape, was injured and taken away by the police. The second thing was Larry's negative energy was unable to return to live inside his body, and Larry was declared dead.
Ooh.
And the third thing was Paul and Mike became fed up with John Byrne telling his story out of sequence.
Yes, so. Didn't we just? I hope he doesn't keep using that shtick.
Oh, I don't think he would. But let's have a look. Oh, our story opens with a caption that says, West Texas, 2:05 p.m. today. And no, I'm not going to do it. I can't. All right, so what I did was I wrote down all the timestamps in this issue.
Oh, God.
So, everyone, if you got your comic there, I want you to rip out pages 1 to 5. Put them at the back because they're the last part of the story. Then I want you to get page 7. That's the first page in this story. If you could get pages 11 to 13, and then they go next.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the next bit of the story. Page 6 comes after page 13.
Yep.
Then you need to go 6 and 7, and halfway through page 8, rip that in half.
Right.
Because the bottom of page 8 happens next.
Right.
And then you need to put in page 9 at the bottom, so let's call it page 9.8.
Right.
And then we will have pages 14 to 21.
Right.
Okay.
Just hang on, just rip in a bit. Ordinarily, I wouldn't encourage people to rip comics up, but in this case, it's justified for so many reasons.
Okay. Okay, just staple it together, Mike. I think we can do the story now.
Hang on. Yep, done.
Okay. So those of you playing at home, there are 7 different timestamps in this comic, and they were all out of order, and we've now just put them in order to tell this pretty mundane story that doesn't really have any reason to be told out of order. All right, so here we go. Here's the story. All right. Nudge is concerned about Grunt, the four-armed gorilla, and she whines about it to Vortex, the blue alien guy, and the Martian Manhunter pops back for some stupid reason to tell her that the police are holding Grunt until someone from Gamble's circus can pick him up, because who's more trustworthy than carnies in this sort of situation? She arrives at the police station in time to see Grunt being taken away by the circus folk, and she flashes back to the time she stumbled across the circus and saw a distressed Grunt and calmed him down, and then she joined the circus for a bit until the chief, Rita, and Cliff showed up to buy Grunt. Buy him? And she nudged their minds with her little mind control powers to bring her along as well. And at the Doom Patrol headquarters, Grunt freaked out when Negative Energy Man appeared. So the team locked him up, which is good on the team. And she stops her flashback and nudges her way through the police security. And then she sees Gamble, the man running the circus, and from Gamble's circus, coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
And he isn't surprised to see her still hanging around Grunt. That's the end of that plot. Good times. Rita and Cliff takes Larry's deceased body to the chief's lab, where he declares that Larry isn't quite fully dead. Oh, that's a relief. A bit later, Larry's energy form arrives, looking kind of frazzled, but it's unable to merge with Larry, and the chief proposes that Rita store the energy being inside her.
Okay. Of course, right.
Yes. Meanwhile, nearby in West Texas, a private train is speeding somewhere. A blonde girl on board is upset by something her elderly father has done, and a largest henchman is very concerned about her, almost fixated on her, a bit stalkery, and suddenly something monstrous bursts out of a container car at the back of the train.
Ooh.
And this purple, white, and orange liquid monster starts rampaging around the train and then goes into this high-tech tunnel that's near the train for no reason. And the Doom Patrol are alerted, and they fly there to investigate. And Rita and Cliff tussle with the monster that hurts them because it can transform into gas and acid. But the chief knows the elderly father and chats to him. His name is Simon. The blonde girl comes close to the monster and calls out its real name. The chief douses the monster with some chemicals. Oh, that's why it was in the tunnel, because he could control chemicals there, and that's plot convenience. And they accelerate its transformation and cause the monster to collapse, forming into the familiar shape of Rex Mason, a.k.a. Metamorpho. The end. I don't think it deserves a...
Again, I'm trying to make something good out of all of this.
Wow. Yeah, so imagine that story, but just told in a different order. That's what the comic is like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Entirely justified and understandable.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. What did you think of this, Mike?
I hate this story. I really hate it. I'm not even going to hold it back. There is no reason for all the time jumps back and forth. It makes a fairly, as you said, a mundane story, and it just makes it even worse.
Yeah.
And there's, first of all, yeah, if you kind of read it in sequence, it's a fairly dull story. And then to take a dull story and make it worse just doesn't help anyone.
Yeah. Now, I mean, and there's also stuff not explained here, which I know because I know a little bit about Rex Mason, aka Metamorpho. The girl is Sapphire Stagg, who I think is sometimes his wife, sometimes his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. The old man is Simon Stagg, her dad. Yes. He's a bit of an evil industrialist most of the time.
I'm not one of those again.
Yeah, hard to imagine. And the henchman is a caveman who's been made intelligent, and his name is Java. I don't know if any of these things are true in this comic because John Byrne doesn't spell them out.
And it's all over the place, as is the next issue. It's I'm so angry. To read these. I can't even talk properly.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the things that tips you off if you know the character of Metamorpho is this gaseous, liquidy type monster basically has his colors. He's got a bit of purple, a bit of gold, a bit of orange, and a bit of white. And, you know.
And the fact that those colors on the sort of melting monster are on the cover of the issue, as well as the words "monster morph." And you kind of, if you know any sort of DC history, you kind of go, the orange and white and purple and morph. I wonder. So,
So I'm just wondering what Mike Carlin does while he's editing John Byrne. I mean, does he? I don't think he ever says that's a great idea, John, or that's a bad idea. I mean, maybe he's just organizing the colorist and the letterer, maybe?
Maybe.
He's definitely not telling John what he thinks.
It's look, the good news is, after these two issues, we'll only have 8 more issues left of Byrne's run, which equates to only 4 more episodes we have to dedicate toward Byrne's run.
Awesome.
So, yay.
Yay.
You're right. It's a tale that just doesn't need to be told. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't go anywhere. It just kind of happens, and in a really, really bad way. It's like he loves his time jump shtick, and he thinks, I'm up to issue 9 now. I should really ramp that thing up. It's like, no, you shouldn't. You really shouldn't.
No.
No.
Anyway, let's get through the next stinker.
Issue 10, cover dated May of 2005, but it actually went on sale March 30th of that year, again for $2.50, and again apparently edited by Mike Carlin, written and penciled by John Byrne, inks by Doug Hazelwood, letters by Jared K. Fletcher, and colors by Alex Blaert again. And the cover looks like Grunt, the four-armed ape, has been knocked out cold. Nudge is sort of cowering over his body. And in the background, we can see the feet of Robot Man, Elastigirl, and the Negative Being sort of standing there. And the title reads, "The Tragedy of Nudge and Grunt." And I'm putting so much effort into getting those names right. I still want to say Grudge and Nudge, but it's wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, so to try and reduce some of the confusion of this issue, I've decided to focus on the 3 main story parts rather than deal with the back and forth that Byrne inflicts upon us again.
Right.
Surprise, he used it again, Paul.
I can't imagine.
Again. Yeah. Anyway, in the DPHQ of Key Mordaz in Florida, the team learns through the power of a flashback that Simon Stagg's latest experiments on Rex Mason, which would make Rex human again, but allow him to keep his Metamorpho powers. Of course, it all went to hell in a handbasket, and that's where the patrol came in, last issue. The chief begins to work on a way to help Rex, and as he turns to Rita to ask for her opinion on treatment at a biomolecular level, she faints, causing the Negative Being to pop out of her body as Robot Man catches her mid-fall. By the time Rita comes to, Niles has built a containment suit for Rex, which he seems slightly ungrateful for, and this suit keeps his powers in check, while the rest of the patrol are arguing over the best way to sustain the negative being without causing further harm to its new host. Their tests are suddenly interrupted by an alarm activating, alerting them to a code red involving Nudge, Paul. Oh, no.
Oh.
We learn that the code red is due to all the trouble that Nudge, Vortex, and Grunt have found themselves in over in Harbor City. Nudge and Vortex have tracked down the circus boss Gamble at Police Plaza, which we saw in the previous issue anyway. As Gamble and his goons are wheeling Grunt away and the ape is strapped to a gurney, two cops come forward towards the commotion caused by Gamble as he warns his men to ignore Nudge's voice. And it's at this moment that Grunt breaks free of his restraints and attacks. A cop yells, "It's going crazy!" and opens fire, her bullet going straight through Vortex, leaving a trail of blue gunk going down his back. And in response, he unleashes his Vortex power, subduing the group. Right. Just as Nudge begins to question Vortex about how he survived the gunshot, Grunt grabs both of them and leaps out a window, swinging over buildings and trains across the city with police cars and choppers in pursuit. Nudge probes the ape's mind and realizes that he's not just running, he has somewhere he wants to be. And soon enough, he rips open a window of an apartment building and lands them all safely into a bedroom. Nudge and Vortex realizes that it's a teenager's room, but everything within it seems about a year out of date. Grunt shoves a school yearbook. That's what they say. Oh, it's like, you know, this stuff's like a year old.
Oh,
like,
this poster's a year old.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Let's comment on that.
So, yeah, they realize it's like everything's a year out of date. And at this point, Grudge shoves a school yearbook into Nudge's hand, pointing at a photo of a chubby, bespectacled boy named Henry Butcher. And just as Mi-San gasps and puts two and two together, riot police burst into the room and start firing on Grunt, which sends him hurtling out of the window to certain doom. Mm. But before we get any closure on that, we're treated to yet another flashback. Where we learn that Mi-San, who's Nudge, and this Henry Boucher boy both attended the Prescott Preparatory School in Harbor City. We see Mi-San being pressured by a kid named Garrett about some sort of score, and a fight breaks out when Henry tries to stick up for her. A teacher slugs them all with detention, with the exception of Mi-San, who uses her budding suggestive mind powers to avoid the punishment. Later that night, Mi-San is caught trying to sneak out of her house by her father, who isn't a fan of her looking so tarted up, and wondering where she's going at this time of night. Of course, the argument ends with her running off defiantly, and poor old Dad stands there clutching at his chest. The troubled, or is that troublesome, teenager eventually meets up with her friends in a filthy basement in a dodgy part of town, where Garrett, surprise, surprise, sells them some hardcore drugs, which they all instantly pop. Unbeknownst to the group, Henry is watching all of this through a nearby convenient window, and unbeknownst to Henry, he's being watched by a woman in a nearby car. Creepy, creepy. So the kids have a bizarre psychedelic group trip that causes the air around them to literally start glowing, and Garrett freaks out, running for the door but tripping over Henry in the process. The woman in the car arrives with a gadget in hand, scanning for powerful minds, which is apparently Henry's. Although it's implied that the drugs somehow boosted Mi-San's mind and hers merged with his just long enough for this strange lady in the car to go, aha, he'll do for my mad experience, before driving off with her goon Garrett and the abducted Henry. So the cops turn up and take Mi-San to hospital, where we learn the other kids overdose, or more specifically, in medical terms, their brains were turned to guacamole. That's what a doctor actually says in the hospital. Her enraged parents arrive demanding answers, but poor old Mr. Kwan can't take it and his heart gives out once and for all. Later at his funeral, Mi-San is told to not blame herself for her father's death, but her brother, well aware of her mind control powers, blames her specifically for killing their father. She's a witch! Burn her. As for poor old Henry, he wakes up strapped to a bed in the lab of crazy car lady, Dr. Rhonda Law, who will be attempting to transplant a human brain into the body of a four-armed gorilla she genetically engineered. Uh-huh. The next time Henry awakens, the good mad doctor tells him the experiment was a success despite the gorilla's brain dying and her needing to pare away the speech and memory parts of Henry's brain in order for it to fit in the gorilla's skull. But other than that, it's all good. Henry the ape shrieks in horror as he watches Law and Garrett push his human body into a furnace. The end. Oh my god. What did you think of issue 10, Paul?
I'm Henry the Ape. I am Henry the Ape. way to take the fun out of a four-armed gorilla as a concept. What is wrong with John Byrne, really? I mean,
and there's the title for this episode.
This is repellent and repugnant, this story.
Yes. That's a very polite way to put it. And I get that there's, what happened to Henry is tragic. Do I really care that much about Grunt or Henry? No, I don't.
No.
It 10 issues in, I don't really care about him at all. We've seen so little of Grunt to make him an endearing character that I just don't care about his origin story. And I don't care about Mi-Sun or Nudge, sorry. I just don't care about them enough to really give a shit.
No, it's 10 issues and I don't know. It's written by someone who has no understanding of how to make a character compelling or interesting or make you empathize with a person. At best, the character writing in this version of the Doom Patrol makes you not annoyed with someone, a character. It's very best. Like, I'm not annoyed by Cliff, for instance, in this comic. But, anyway, this sounds fairly negative, I'm suspecting.
Look, they can't all be winners. But, I haven't looked ahead to issue 11 or 12 yet, so I don't really get what Metamorpho is doing there at all, other than that it's just some sort of maybe Byrne just wanted to write Rex in his comic just for laughs. The whole thing about putting the negative being in a different body, that sort of starts to get explored, but then that's cut away to follow up on this craziness with the new characters that, obviously Byrne wants to, introduce them and have them as part of his stamp on the team, but I just don't like them. I just don't care about them.
No.
And you're right. What happens is repellent, but it's kind of like, it's ugly stuff. There's group drug taking and there's, kids being kidnapped and operated on, but do I really care about these characters? No, unfortunately.
How dark is the bit where Henry wakes up and he can't talk and he watches the doctor push his old body into the furnace?
Yeah. That's...
hey.
That's, as horrible as it sounds, that is a good horror movie moment right there.
Yeah.
But again, I'm kind of just like, okay, well, that happens. I don't really care about Grunt enough to shed a tear.
No.
It's like, I know how Grunt came to be now. And I don't think we ever see this doctor ever again. So I think she just...
that wouldn't surprise me.
She went on Niles Caldo, decided to do some weird experiments involving animals.
Yeah.
She genetically engineered a four-armed gorilla.
Yeah.
And then just wanted to put a human's brain in there just for laughs. I'm so angry about these two issues, Paul.
It's like John Byrne is the fun police and he just rounded up every single little bit of fun about this concept and shot it. A four-armed gorilla is an inherently goofy, crazy concept, and you can have a lot of fun with that. There's a character with four arms in the new Solo Star Wars film, and that he's fun. He's a great little character because he's got four arms, and that's crazy, and he does things. But not here. It says on the cover the tragedy of Nudge and Grunt. It's everyone's tragedy. This whole comic is it's our tragedy.
Yes. So, gosh.
All right. So, feel free to rip this one up as well, people.
I must tip my hat to you for figuring out which pages we need to rip out and restaple in the correct order. I didn't put that much effort into it. I had to read each story part in full to do my notes and then try and put it in a logical order because I'm so sick of jumping back and forth in time with this series. I really am.
It's like John Byrne knew that someone would attempt to synopsize this comic and wanted to make it impossible. We're on to you, Byrne.
Yeah, you bastard, Byrne.
All right. I think we might stop talking about these comics now.
Yeah, I think we've doomsplained that as much as we can without wanting to harm ourselves.
Job done. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
Born and raised to make a kill, she was not given her own will. Her first hit left her feeling only disdain. She ran to Gotham's no man's land, learned from Barbara Gordon's hand, that starts the legacy of Cassandra Cain. Rising from the devastation of no man's land, a new warrior joined the Bat family. Daughter of David Cain and Lady Shiva, trained from birth to be the ultimate killer, but choosing instead to save lives. She's been Batgirl, Black Bat, and Orphan. She is Cassandra Cain. Join Mike Staley as he goes through every appearance of one of DC's most underrated characters in Silent Night, the Cassandra Cain podcast, on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and at silentnight.podomatic.com.
And now it's that part of the show where we look at the mailbag and the question of the week, and we asked everybody to ask us anything, but don't mention ponies, which we stressed. So hopefully everyone respected that. So
I should hope so. I would hope our legion of loyal fans would be so kind as to not mention ponies, because I hate that joke. It is literally flogging a dead horse, guys. Literally.
For those of you who are recent to the show and are unfamiliar with the pony thing, I think the first semblance of sentience in the Twitter account was when the Twitter account promised that Mike would give everyone a pony if we reached 1 million downloads. Now, I just need to point out, we have not reached 1 million downloads. So
No.
Yeah. No ponies. No ponies.
No ponies.
No ponies.
No mention of ponies.
Yeah.
No. Maybe once we get closer to the million, but until then, shut up about the ponies.
This is bloody hard. Fractures at Fractures, he said, it's make your own Doom Patrol time. Rules, no current, previous or current members of the Doom Patrol. Minimum numbers of members, 6. Bonus points for suggesting the first villain they go up against. And he said, no, Mike, you can't use Mento.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to say the robot Hour Man. I want him in the Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I want, I think Ragman can be in my Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
I like Element Woman, Element Girl, the female Metamorpho. She's rad. Let's say, I can't use Beast Boy. I want to use Beast Boy.
No, you can't.
No, I can't. I can't use.
Well, hang on, you've given us 3, right?
All right. Why don't you?
What if I come up with 3?
Yeah, and we then can there's get through it that 6. Way. Yeah, that'd be
and
great.
While I'm while I'm saying this bit, you can think of their first villain, and we'll get bonus points.
Okay.
Cool. So I will say Blue Devil.
Oh, good one. Yeah.
I think he'd be fun.
Yeah.
Animal Man.
Ooh, yes.
There's your Beast Boyish element there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to think of a woman character for a bit more balance. Damn you, Freck! This is hard.
I got one.
Okay.
Rampage. What about Rampage? Kitty Faulkner from she's a Star Labs technician who turned into a monster. She's a bit like a female Hulky type.
Right. Oh, okay. Yes. I vaguely recall her now. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Mohawk.
Sure. There we go. There's the all new, all different, this time for really different, Doom Patrol.
Okay. And the first villain they go up against is Clayface.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. I like it.
High five.
Well done. Yeah, high five back at you. We did good.
Yeah, we did.
That's an alternate Doom Patrol I would definitely read. For sure. Thank you, Frack, with air quotes around it. Thank you.
Thank you, Samet.
Yes. Mofarkin Tarkin, a.k.a. Chris, a.k.a. Unlikely Nerd on the Twitter, said, how in the hell am I supposed to ask a question that doesn't involve ponies? This is a question about the rule, so I didn't break the rule. You could have asked any other question in the world, Chris.
Yeah. We heard from Cameron Williams at Wasgo on Twitter, and he said, what animal is best for settling a debt of miniature horses?
This sounds like a riddle or something that would somehow involve ponies, so I'm going to ignore the question completely.
Yep. we heard from Dr. Ange 70, and save us from this pony talk. At some point, you may have covered all there is of the Doom Patrol, so what property would the next podcast be? Mike, what have you got?
Oh, do I have to? I don't know. I'm looking forward to retirement, not to be honest. There's a kind of obscure DC character that I've had an idea for some time, but I'm not going to spoil the actual format or idea at this stage in case it does happen. But the character, you may not have heard of him, he's called Batman.
Batman.
So there's that. The other idea I had, and this is kind of good timing on Ange's part because it's partly inspired by him, is if I had the time and the energy and the funds, I would do a podcast about Australian music.
Ooh.
And it would be like a radio show with nothing but Australian music from, you know, across all the decades.
From Men at Work to In Excess.
Yes, and beyond. Because, surprisingly, there is more to Australian music than Men at Work and In Excess.
Wow.
Yeah. What about you, Paul? What would you like to cover?
Well, I mean, you and I did bat around the idea of doing a Hitman podcast at one point with the Garth Ennis, John McRae character. But can I honestly feel I'm kind of over the index format. Like, I don't want to do a character's appearances in order.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think I've gotten used to jumping around with the Doom Patrol and, you know, because I don't want to get bogged down in this happened and then this happened and then this happened with a character. So I would probably do something completely different and maybe focus on a character like Deadshot and do his, you know, just cover different eras of Deadshot. So when he was with the Suicide Squad and the Secret Six and, you know, when he was just a Batman villain who, you know, dressed in a top hat and was a fancy man. just that sort of thing, I think. I think I would enjoy that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, Doug Zavisha at DZavisha on the Twitters asked, will boxes or briefs be available in the Waiting for Doom Etsy store? I would say both.
No, mankinis.
Sure, all three of them. Because to, you know, ignore one is to just miss out on money, you know? We would offer a wide range of comfort and styles for people. I don't know what I'm saying.
Okay, we heard from Sean, who's at Secret Wars and Beyond. He's got a podcast. Sean's very good. I'm not talking about his behavior. I'm talking about his podcasting.
Right.
I kind of vouch for his behavior at this point. He asks, if they relaunch Doom Patrol, who do you want as the creative team? Can I go first?
Sure.
I want a straightforward, non, you know, more traditional, superheroic, fun, humor-based Doom Patrol at this point. I would want Tom Taylor to write it. Tom Taylor would be my number one pick for writing it. And art-wise, Doc Shaner. Doc Shaner.
Yes.
Taylor and Shaner.
I like it. Remember many years ago there was a rumor going around that Tom was going to be writing Doom Patrol?
Yeah, he debunked that for me and said that was never the case. So.
Yeah. I can't top that. Although, based on previous conversations, I'll say I would love for Nick Darrington to stay on the book.
Yeah.
But if we can get Steve Orlando in, because he's killing it on everything he does at the moment.
Yeah.
He comes up with great ideas, and he always seems to find a way to pay respect to the DC history and legacy. You know, he knows his stuff, and he loves moving it forward. So,
yeah, I bet he's read Doom Patrol Volume 3.
Yeah, I bet he has. Well, we then heard from Martin Gray at Mart Gray, and he asked, you'll know this after the reread, so what was going on with the cutaways to the Chief?
They were just interesting ways of having the Chief in the story.
That was my guess. Curious little vignettes featuring the Chief doing wacky stuff in different locales.
Yeah.
And not having any real bearing on the story, I guess, except for maybe when he met Larry in the hospital dreamscape thing where he had the family in his alternate life there. That's as close as we got to anything meaningful in those scenes, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't pretend to understand it, but I was entertained. So
yeah,
and I will settle for that in the absence of understanding. Now, we did hear from Tim Price at Tim Price 17, and he asked us, should Rita Farr be renamed Elasti Woman? Why or why not? Personally, I think she should remain Elasti Girl because that is her name. And I would never want her to see her renamed with something that's more, you know, hip and trendy, a bit like, you know, the way Beast Boy went to be called Changeling. I don't want her to have a different name that is more, you know, modern sounding. I like the fact that she sounds like a Legionnaire from the 60s. And I mean like the Legion of Superheroes, not as in the French Foreign Legion. Or
we got you, dude.
Oh, good. Yeah. What about you?
Also, isn't Elasti Woman in The Incredibles, or does she have a different name?
No, I think she is Elasti Woman.
Yeah, and I think that's because Elastigirl was already taken by Rita Farr.
Maybe. So, maybe the power of Disney outweighs the power of DC at this point.
How dare you? Yeah, look, I'm happy for her to stick with Elastigirl. Yeah, it's a nice retro throwback, and Moby One at Shmoby One asked, have you read John Byrne's Next Men, and if so, did you enjoy it?
I did, and it was good, but not good enough for me to keep. I think I sold the, I mean, there was one issue which had I think the first color appearance of Hellboy, and I sold that for a pretty penny that I would get much more pretty pennies for if I'd kept it and sold it now. And I got rid of the rest of the series because I thought I enjoyed this, but I'm not really going to reread it. But it was a good series, and it was a hell of a lot better than the comics we read today, I will say.
What was it? Okay, because I have not read it, and you've just answered my question as to whether or not it was better or worse than these. So,
yeah, but I mean, I do remember, I mean, it was creator-owned by John Byrne. It was coming out from Dark Horse, and basically he just stopped it, and he said it just wasn't worth his time to do it money-wise, and I just thought, well, that's... That's a little bit contemptuous of the readers who bought all the issues and then you just stopped. Anyway, but, we heard from Sean again, and he said, if you could add any character in the DCU to the Doom Patrol, who would you add? How would he or she fit the team, and what would he or she add to the team? I would put Mala on the team.
Really?
Yeah.
Monster Mala, you'd put him on the Doom Patrol.
Yep, he's not really that bad. I read the Titans Annual that came out recently, and in that he was... Basically, the brain was transcending physical form and becoming like a god. And Mala switched sides to stop the brain doing that because he knew that gods have no time for regular people or gorillas. So, it was all about him, stopping the brain from going beyond his love for the brain. So,
right.
Yeah, so he's not all bad. And, he's a gorilla. It's a fun character. Like, who can't have fun with a gorilla?
Dr. Rhonda Law. Well, she had her own weird fun. For me, I don't know why I'm on a Blue Devil kick, but I'm going to say Blue Devil again. Yeah. I haven't read any Blue Devil in years and years, but I recall him being a kind of quirky, fun kind of character, you know, leaping around and fighting, what's that demon's name, Nebaroth?
Nebaroth,
there we go.
Would you downplay the supernatural side of Blue Devil for this?
No, I think that should still be a factor in there, because I think that would add something different for the team to face, which we haven't really seen since, the Arcudi Huat era. Oh. So Blue Devil could bring that sort of thing in. And, you know, there could be an ongoing running gag about trying to get him out of that damn costume finally. I think it would be a nice little B-grader addition to the team. Yeah,
that'd be good. I mean, the other way you could go is to put a really straight conservative character on the team with the patrol, like someone who's complete contrast, like someone like Dr. 13 or The Question. Or
The Question, oh my God. What are you freaks doing? How did I end up here? Oh, dear. Oh, look, it's a question from Aaron Long at Juice005. And he asks, which component of a taco do you most identify with as a human?
Grated cheese.
I'll say the meat in the taco, because it's flesh and I'm a fleshy human. I don't know.
Good question. Mm.
No, it's not.
Fractures came back with another question. He said, don't you think it's time we had an Ostrander Suicide Squad omnibus and an Ostrander Firestorm omnibus and an Ostrander Hawkworld omnibus? Yes. Probably no for Firestorm. I don't think it was his strongest stuff. And yes for Hawkworld. Yes. Yeah, Hawkworld was very good up until the end of the Hawkworld, but not when he rebooted it as Hawkman, because then it was crap.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Do you have an opinion particularly on
that? I'll just say yes to all three. Okay. Give the fans what they want. Why deny us, DC? Why?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's very weird that DC has been collecting Suicide Squad in trades, and they've done 8, and the 9th would finish the entire run, and they haven't released it for some reason. It's now been probably a couple of years.
Wow.
So, you know, bring on the Suicide Squad sequel, because the best thing that came from the Suicide Squad movie was the release of the trades.
Okay.
And nothing else.
Oh, look, it's Frack again. Hey. He's asked this time, who is our favourite Doom Patrol artist?
This changes for me from time to time, but at the moment I cannot get enough of Tang and Huat art from Volume 3. I that stuff is fresh as a daisy when you come back to it after looking at some of the other stuff. It's dynamic and interesting, and I just find it as modern as anything you see today. It's wonderful. Yeah. And it's what, 17 years old now or something. Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate having to pick single favorite things. I really do.
Just say at the moment.
Well, at the moment, Darrington. I love, love, love Nick Darrington stuff. I think for me, he is now in my top 3 Doom Patrol artists. I just love, he's got a brilliant way with facial features and reactions, and, you know, like the fight scene in the supermarket between the Brotherhood of Nada and the Patrol was just so chaotic yet brilliant at the same time. There was so much going on, but, like, the detail he puts into it all, and, you know, the really quiet moments, like where, you know, Casey's about to torch Danny Land. Yeah, it's just, I just love it. It's brilliant, brilliant stuff. I will really, really miss Nick on the patrol if and when he ever leaves.
Yeah.
Please don't leave us, Nick.
Don't leave.
Please don't.
No. Stay. Okay. We'll zip through these other frat questions. Which version of Hawkman is your favorite, Mike?
The one with the wings.
The one with the wings?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Hawkworld Thanagarian cop from post-crisis. Particularly right. By Ostrander. There we go. That's my favourite. Frack also asks, is Milk Wars going to be covered on DC OCD cast? I'm thinking not. I don't think it's eventy enough.
It's not a big eventy thing. No. I mean, it was an event. Yeah, in comparison to all the other events we've got lined up and the ones we've covered, I think it's better off in its own little pocket universe thing.
Yeah, but if we did, it would probably land somewhere in the 70s out of 100. That's what I reckon. So
Yeah.
Just imagine. We heard from Jack Rocher at Old Fashioned Outlaw, and he said, please have your humans answer, name your favorite Doom Patrol artist. I think we've done that. And writer. Yep. Okay, writer. Mike, you're on the spot.
Arnold Drake.
Arnold Drake? Okay. Today, I'm going to say John Arcudi.
Okay. Yeah. You're loving Volume 3, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah.
It's doing it for me.
Yes. Ed Latore asked, if you could have your ideal Doom Patrol series, which cast members do you want to appear?
Ooh. Well, Robot Man. But yeah.
Has to have Robot Man.
Has to have Robot Man. I'm loving Rita. Mm-hmm. Loving Rita. I want classic Rita, though. I want stretchy actress Rita.
Mm-hmm.
I would want Ava. Free.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, on the team. Yeah. Your turn, Mike. Who do you want?
Okay, it's got to have the core four of Niles, Rita, Larry, Cliff. It's got to have Crazy Jane for me, Danny the Street for the transportation needs, and Fug.
I'd want to see Hot Hands back. I'd like to see...
Really?
Yeah, I'd like to see Hot Hands gets a bit more respect.
Hang on, which Hot Hands are we talking about? Are we talking Arcudi Huet Hot Hands or original Hot Hands?
Classic Hot Hands.
Classic Hot
Hands. Yeah, I'd just like him to... He wasn't treated very respectfully, and I think you could treat him, you know, if you stop writing him as a caricature and write him as a proper person,
mm-hmm.
you know, he could be very, very compelling. Anyway.
Actually, I'd also want to add Casey. I do like Casey Brink
to the team.
I think if you're going to have Fug, you've got to have Casey as well. Yeah.
We heard from Craig R. McDee at Craig101, and he said, favorite comic book team that isn't the Doom Patrol. Well, traditionally, I would say the Suicide Squad because that was my favorite comic for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept and the name of the Suicide Squad ain't what it used to be.
Right.
Well, I'm looking at you, New 52. So with that in mind, another super team, I'm going to say Next Wave.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be boring and just say the Justice League. I just think they're great. I just love Justice League Adventures. I think they're a cool gang, and they have some pretty cool adventures.
Would you let Hot Hands join Justice League?
Hands is dead.
Oh, man.
Gord Tolton at RM Ranger asked, Olivia Newton-John or Kylie Minogue?
Let's count as three and say our answers. One, two, three. Kylie Minogue. No disrespect to Livy, but...
No, none at all.
Livy is not an active creative entity in my life at the moment.
No.
It's just back catalogue for Livy.
Yes,
but
agreed.
Kylie is still busting out the bloody catchy tunes.
Yeah, people will probably be surprised given how often I go on about Livy.
I was surprised. You surprised me, Mike. You swerved.
It may have been that Kylie had been bombarding her social media lately with pictures and clips and that to celebrate her 50th birthday recently. Yeah, Kylie.
Mm. All right. Now we heard from Carl Bakey at C Bakeware, and he said, in the cosmic event that I just came up with, which is Doomsday 2K18 or 2018, one villain has joined the Doom Patrol, leaving a beloved member of our favorite team to go all super villainy. Mike and Paul, who would you have swap places with who? And PS, you can't say Niles. I'm going to go with Mala joining the team. And
yep.
Mala. And I would have Larry go evil.
Ooh, okay.
Just because evil Larry sounds convincing as a name.
That's kind of similar to mine. I was going to have Larry / the negative being just go insane and berserk and realize that he can actually split up into multiple negative energy beings.
Ooh.
So imagine an army of those assaulting the world.
Well, you've gone all fanficky on me.
I have. And in order to help fight this new dilemma, I was going to have Brainiac join the team.
Brainiac? Which one?
Oh, now you're asking the hard questions. Oh, I don't know. The green-skinned one with the technology and the big skull ship. That one.
Right.
I figure if you want future tech to try and possibly halt this army of negative beings, you want the worst of the worst. sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Moby1 at Shmoby1 asks, can we please, please, please see some more amazing Waiting for Doom pod art? That postcard was the bee's knees.
We're working on it. We've got something in the works.
Mm.
But you guys have got to earn it, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, when was the last time we got an iTunes review, Mike?
Oh, I can't even remember. It's been a while.
Yeah, we need the iTunes clock, don't we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, God.
We've got something planned, but you guys have to step up. You got to earn these things.
Yeah. Every relationship is a two-way street, guys.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe stickers this time. Maybe
a Ooh.
Waiting for Doom sticker. Stick it on your stuff. That's what we'll tell you to do with it.
Well, we have kind of sort of not really discussed T-shirts, but
yeah.
But yeah, there's some art that I have seen, and it's pretty cool. But yeah, come on, guys. Play part. We heard from Moby again, and he asked, do you prefer your sausage dogs to be Palomino or Shetland?
They're types of... Anyway.
I'll just say yes.
Yes. Aaron Long returned for another God. Question. He said, why, in the name of God, did you leave this so open-ended?
Yes, Paul, why did you?
To make it interesting.
Right. How's that going?
It's not going so good right now.
Aaron chimed in again and asked, please tell me which member of the X-Men comes to mind first when you hear the word lamp, and then explain why.
Gambit, because I picture him under a lamp.
Right. I will say Jubilee, because she's bright and sparkly like a lamp. Yay. Oh, God, it's Aaron Long again.
Okay.
You can only listen to one Phil Collins song on repeat for the rest of time. All other music ceases to exist. What song do you choose, Paul? Oh, my God.
I'd say Against All Odds.
Okay.
It's like I get bored with In the Air Tonight, and that's the only other option that I would consider.
Oh, okay.
But, like, if I picked Easy Lover, I'd have to kill myself.
I'll go with Sussudio, just because it's boppy. And...
Oh, mate, you'd be dead by day two.
Well, look, that's what Aaron makes me feel like. But anyway, oh, look, it's Aaron Long again. If you were to offer to give away a four-legged animal and then back out of said offer, what kind of animal would it be? It'd
be an aardvark, wouldn't it?
Yep, that's right. We're giving away aardvarks now.
Yep. Frack's back. That's unusual for him. He doesn't take opportunities to ask his questions when they come up, does he? He said, have you guys read Global Frequency yet? If not, why? I have. I read it when it came out, and it was lots of like standard. It was like a team that would form from different people just to deal with some weird threat, so they'd have people with expertise in the type of scientific threat that it was.
Okay.
So, and it was very well written. It was very Warren Ellis, which is a good thing if you're in that mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
I have not read it yet, and that's purely just to spite you, Frack, in your face. Yeah. Oh, look, it's Frack again. Is there any comic you've read in the past that you thought could have been a good Doom Patrol story? Can't use Umbrella Academy, sorry.
The Amazing Screw-On Head by Mike Mignola.
Right.
That could be a Doom Patrol villain of the past.
Okay, yeah. Just off the top of my head, something like The Superior Spider-Man, where it was actually the villain in the brain of the hero. Something like that would be interesting. And to see them sort of trying to live up to heroic ideals, but still, you know, being a bit of a bad person, really, when I boil down to it. There's something like that would be cool to see. I'm not sure which one would get brain swapped, but could be fun, depending, you know, regardless of which one it was. Yeah.
Cool. David Ennis got in touch via Facebook and said, now that TV series is on the way, will you be purchasing some Elastigirl herbal breast augmenter? I will personally not. My breasts are subtle and alluring as they are.
My moobs, similarly, don't need any augmentation. So having not even heard of this product, I will probably pass. Thanks, David.
Thanks.
And then we heard from Jared Driscoll, who asked, if you were hired by a comic book company to resurrect any defunct comic book property, which property would you resurrect? Paul.
Oh, damn. I would resurrect Megaforce. Megaforce, yes.
Megaforce.
They were dudes with vehicles. It was a whole thing. It was a movie. And I think they were comic book time.
I think I recall this. And there was like a big battle truck sort of thing.
Yeah. Is that there? Yeah.
And they had motorbikes and...
I think it had Chuck Norris in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'd do something with that. I don't know why. It's the only thing I can think of that isn't having something done with it right now.
Okay. Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think. I honestly don't know. I don't know if they're even in Marvel at the moment, but I wouldn't mind seeing something like the Power Pack back.
All right, yeah.
Like actual school-age superhero, you know, and children sort of dealing with being kids and being superheroes at the same time. I think that kind of rebooted in some way or, you know, brought into the modern age would be interesting to see. But, yeah.
Okay.
That was a tough one, Jared. Damn
it. Yeah, bloody hard. Unfair. Karthik Harkarella has asked, what do you call Equus ferus caballus in Australia? We call it Kevin.
I think that might be Latin for horse.
Maybe some variant of the horse.
Thanks, Karthik. Thanks. Oh, look, it's Clinton Robson who's asked, when do I get my official WFD pony? I seem to have lost the tracking number.
Keep looking.
You son of a...
Mike Gillis from Radio vs. the Martians got in touch and he said, what are inherently creepier, clowns or porcelain dolls?
Clowns.
Clowns?
Yep.
What about porcelain dolls of clowns?
Oh, yeah. No, clowns. Anything clowns. Yep. And our final question came from Frack again, this time tracking us down on Facebook, saying, aha, so I can mention Mento? To which I responded, well, if it's in the form of a question about him, sure. But he didn't actually follow up with an actual question involving Mento, so whatever, Frack. Whatever. Thanks for all those questions, guys. And thanks, Paul, for keeping it interesting with that.
So where do we go from here?
Next time on the feed, it's another episode of DCOCD where the topic will be Nightfall.
Oh, bloody Nightfall, eh?
Bloody Nightfall. That bloody poor night fell over. Yes. And then after that, we're on a week off. Because
hey.
I think someone's going overseas to somewhere pretty awesome. It's not me.
Look out, America. I'm coming.
But when we do return... with Waiting for Doom. Do we have another question of the week, Paul? A proper question of the week.
We do. So this question of the week is, who is your favourite comic book character with no secret identity, no alternate identity?
Wow. Okay, well, at least we've got plenty of time to think of that answer. But that's pretty much us done for this episode. So as always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can get in touch via Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can get in touch via the Waiting for Doom Facebook page or on Doug's excellent blog site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Awesome. Okay, Mike, we'll catch you soon, eh?
Catch you next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.